A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Variant Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. We're going to be talking with NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin here in just a moment or two. The NRA announcing today a restructuring, an organizational restructuring that they say aimed at maximizing member dollars, streamlining operations, and investing in critical programs that best serve NRA members and ensure the long-term strength of the organization. This restructuring primarily taking place within NRA Media, which is used to be called NRA Publications. So we're talking about cuts to a couple of the magazines that the NRA has been producing. Also, they will merge its membership, marketing, and advancement divisions into a single department. This restructuring does come with the loss of some jobs, unfortunately. We're going to talk about it again with NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin. What does this mean for the immediate future of the organization? What does this mean for the long-term future of the organization? And what can members expect as a result of these changes? What, frankly, can non-members expect as a result of these changes? You know, the NRA, and I told Doug this in our conversation, I am not an unbiased observer here. You know, from 2004 to 2019, I hosted Cam and Company on NRA News, then NRA TV. I'm a benefactor life member of the National Rifle Association. I am someone who believes that the NRA, that the Second Amendment movement needs a strong NRA, that the NRA needs to survive. But I am also well aware of how we got here, right? The misspending on the part of NRA executives. You know, the I have described Letitia James's attempt to shut down the NRA as a witch hunt. And I think this was politically motivated. But unfortunately, Letitia James was able to document some financial abuses by individuals at the NRA who are no longer there, thankfully. And we have seen this reform movement, the NRA 2.0 movement, that has led to significant changes in the board, certainly significant changes in NRA leadership. And personally, I hope that the NRA has turned a corner and that these moves will, in fact, allow the organization to become stronger. That is my personal opinion. I want to put it out there because I don't want anybody to accuse me of having some hidden bias. My bias is right there on my sleeve. I make no bones about it. But with that in mind, take a look and listen to our conversation with NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin. Doug, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Cam. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about this. The NRA announcing some restructuring today, and one of the areas it seems where we're seeing some major restructuring is in NRA Publications, which I know that must be tough for you since you were the head of NRA Publications before becoming Executive Vice President, but we are seeing what the consolidation, two titles going away, right? America's First Freedom and Shooting Illustrated, and then American Rifleman and American Hunter. There are going to be some changes there as well, right? Can you talk about that, Doug?
Sure. What we're looking to do is modernize. We've been fortunate to have four print publications going out monthly. And so we're going to consolidate those four print titles into the two flagship brands, American Rifleman and American Hunter. Those two brands will be published 12 times a year, 8 of them digitally, 12 of them digitally, but 4 will be in print as well. So it'll be quarterly print for American Rifleman and American Hunter and 12 times digitally.
Okay. You know, America's First Freedom, a little bit different than, you know, the other publications, right? Because it was so focused on the politics of the Second Amendment. I'm curious, are we going to see a shift to more political coverage in Rifleman and American Hunter? Will the editorial side of things be changing at all in those magazines that are continuing to be published?
The America's First Freedom brand will continue as a website.
Okay.
And the editor-in-chief, Frank Miniter, will continue to feed the website and continue to conduct interviews and produce feature content, but it won't be in a print property. It'll be digital.
Okay. Well, I gotta say that's good, and I think even from a just from a logistical standpoint, I think it's good because one of the issues, I mean, as you well know, you know, the print media has been suffering for some time, but we live in this day and age of immediacy in terms of news, and I think it's always been a challenge for America's First Freedom. How do you come up with timely stories that aren't out of date when you've got, you know, a several weeks advance period where you've got to get your stories written? It sounds like this may actually allow America's First Freedom to be more flexible and actually offer more timely coverage of issues going forward.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the charge is going to be, how do you create buzz around stories, and how can you use social media and other levers to drive audience to this important content? You're right. I mean, every day there's something new that's developing at the state level and even at the federal level. So this will give Frank everything he needs to continue to do the important work he's doing. And so we're just pivoting here and then taking the resources that had been expended to do the print property and reinvest them in other places in our business.
All right. Well, let's talk about that too, because also membership, marketing, advancement divisions, these are all merging into a single department as well, right? What's the idea behind that?
Yeah, the thinking with advancement and membership is members are paid advocates. I mean, they have come to us because they have gone to the website, they've filled out the template, they've entered their credit card data, they've made a conscious decision to be a member of the NRA. And then over time, because they're part of this NRA membership family, we'd like to grow them into a Golden Eagle, a benefactor member, a life member. So it's a stepping stone, and through better data management, we'll be able to move initial 1 year members into 5 years, into life, into benefactor, into endowment. And then over time, they support us in a bigger way. It's a way for us to expand their involvement and participation.
These moves do come with a cost. I know that there's a cost savings here involved, but we are talking about a reduction in force for NRA employees, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Can you talk about how many employees are impacted by these moves?
Yeah, it'll be less than 10%, less percent of the staff in total. Cam, I think it's one of those things that businesses and major corporations, they go through restructurings. And so my belief is this is going to make us stronger. And we have been through a difficult period, some of it, you know, undeserved. And ultimately, though, the objective is to make NRA stronger so we can ensure Second Amendment rights for all those law-abiding citizens that are out there. So this is an important move for us.
Do these decisions, I guess, does it help put the NRA on a firmer legal financial footing, I should say? Does this help balance the budget? Are you guys going to be operating in a deficit this year?
Oh, great question. I inherited a really difficult financial situation, and I'm pleased to report that 2025 will be the first time in years we will have a balanced budget. So financially, we are stable, and we are going to get stronger because of the decisions we're making today.
And the moves that you're making here, general operations not impacted, NRA ILA not impacted, right? It's publications, and then the departments that we just talked about, membership, advancement. Those are the areas that that we're seeing the impact, right?
That is correct. We're actually putting more dollars into ILA. We know we've got the 2026 midterms just around the corner. And so we want to have funds to be able to go to those battleground districts and support those candidates that we need to win to maintain the majority in the House and the Senate. Because if we don't do that, Cam, the Trump agenda goes down the tubes. He will be impeached if we lose the House. And it's just a big distraction. We went through it before in 2018. We don't want to go through that again. So this is a strategic move to allow us to participate more on the political side. So John Comerford and his team are going to have more resources. And unfortunately, they had to come from somewhere in the organization. And publications, you're absolutely right, it's painful for me coming from that division after, you know, 10 years there. But print is a medium that's been challenged. I mean, how many local newspapers are left? How many, I mean, you go to a newsstand, I mean, the old days, whether it was your local drugstore, your grocery store, I mean, so NRA's been fortunate, and our members have been fortunate for all these years to have this as a choice for outreach. And so now the reality of the future, which is digital, multimedia, is here for NRA. I think we were fortunate to stay in the game longer than most.
I think that's right. And again, with the, you know, quarterly publications, you guys are still somewhat in the print game. How does this impact, if at all, American Rifleman Television, some of the other, you know, properties that that NRA has, that not necessarily print publications, but definitely fall under the NRA media arm?
Yeah, NRA media will continue to produce the American Rifleman Television show. Mark Keefe will continue to be the host of it. We will draw on all of our websites. We'll draw on all of our print properties, Hunter and Rifleman, and use some of those stories for features that we'll do in the TV show. So, no, American Rifleman TV is very successful and will continue in the future.
Okay. And then, you know, when you talk about providing more resources to NRA ILA with the midterms in mind, I don't know how granular you can get, Doug, but are we talking about, you know, more grassroots coordinators, more lobbyists lobbying in states? I mean, what do those additional resources look like? I know what the intentions are, but what are those actually additional resources? How are they going to manifest themselves?
The good question. They'll manifest themselves in additional staff.
Okay.
And additional dollars to be set aside for campaigning.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, listen, I am not an unbiased observer in all of this. You know, I have said for a long time that the Second Amendment movement needs a strong NRA. The NRA needs to survive. These have been difficult years. Certainly with the NRA 2.0 movement, you know, we have seen some pretty painful steps, but, it is, I got to say, I mean, as an NRA, you know, Benefactor Life member, I'm glad to hear that the balanced budget is a reality this year. It sounds like, you know, when we talked in Atlanta, you talked about this new path, and it sounds like you guys are a couple more steps down that new path. Are you optimistic about the future of the organization right now?
I am very optimistic for the future. And I was on Capitol Hill yesterday, met with several senators, and had a conversation. I'm not going to name names, but they were very grateful for what NRA did in 2024, in the November 2024 elections. And it was Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Montana flipping those three senatorial seats, which now give us the majority in the United States Senate. And so we know how to do those things, and we know what the Senate does. The Senate approves judges, right? So this is a really important body. And so NRA is going to continue to succeed on the election side of things. That's what we do. And ultimately benefit those law-abiding Second Amendment advocates, our members, so that they have that God-given right to protect their homes, their families, their businesses, and live in freedom. That's the goal. So I'm very optimistic for the future. Change is difficult. Change happens every day in corporate America. The National Rifle Association, we've been fortunate. Founded in 1871, next year will be our 155th year that we've been able to, you know, blaze a path with minimal disruption. However, we've seen what lawfare can do. It's been well chronicled, the dollars that have been spent to defend ourselves in New York and in other places. And so it's my job to make sure this organization survives, and not only survives, but thrives. And all these first-time gun buyers, all those listeners that are out there that are not NRA members, we need you to come aboard. I mean, the statistics that I see from NSSF is that over the last 5 or 6 years have been 26.3 million first-time gun buyers. But our membership has deteriorated during that time. So Second Amendment rights have never been stronger because of what NRA's done for so many years. So we need some folks to come back and support us. And those dollars are going to be managed very carefully, and they're going to be circulated out there on the campaign trail so that we can hold the majorities in the 2026 midterms.
Well, I mean, again, you talk about, so you got a couple of issues, I think, with membership, right? So, I mean, as you talked about, the previous regime, there's a lot of distrust, right? And a lot of distrust for the institution. You know, you and I have talked before. My friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio, I know, has, you know, encouraged his members or his listeners, hey, you know, get back on board with the NRA. We're not talking about $1 million shopping trips to Beverly Hills, right? We're not talking about private jets. Those days are over. I think it's fair to say. Is that accurate?
The sport coat that I'm wearing right now, I bought at Nordstrom at the half off sale. I fly coach a lot of times, middle seats, because I'm booking, you know, my travel schedule changes quickly, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no excess, there's no waste. And I just want to mention too, I had a call yesterday from a past board member. He was one of three board members who resigned pretty much in unison several years ago. And he called me yesterday and said, I'm coming back. I'm happy to see what you're doing. I'm happy with the direction of the board. How can I help? I want to come back. And I said, basically what I'm saying to you and your listeners, we need to generate memberships, because those dollars are going to be managed very carefully and they're going to be put back into the fight. You have my word on that.
And, you know, so that brings us to the other issue, I think, which is something that is not specifically impacting NRA, but I think it's affecting it's impacting the industry as well as Second Amendment organizations. And that is the sense of security, right? Well, we've got Donald Trump in the White House. We've got Republicans in control of the Senate and the House. I'm not worried about a ban on so-called assault weapons. I'm not worried about them coming from my guns in Washington, D.C., What is your response to people who say, I don't need to spend money to, to protect my rights? I don't need to belong to an organization like the NRA right now because I don't need them.
We saw what happened in 2016. President Trump gets elected. In 2018, we lose the midterms. All bets are off. And then you've got all kind of initiatives at the state level. We know how onerous the laws are in California because there's a supermajority out there in the legislature. The only way for us to try to even the playing field at all for law-abiding gun owners out there is through the courts. So those actions take dollars. Massachusetts, another example. Colorado, another example. Oregon, Washington State. I mean, if you're living in the deep red states, I mean, in Virginia, where I'm at today, I mean, it's going to be a jump ball here next week. So the point is, this is not the time to become complacent. We need to be vigilant. Nothing stays the same. And we need to protect our rights. And NRA will do that. NRA will do that if we're able to have the support of the members.
Well, again, Doug, I appreciate you joining us on the program. You know, one of the things that one of the changes that I have seen is this transparency, this openness, this ability and willingness to sit down to answer tough questions. You didn't have any idea what I was going to ask you when you agreed to do this. So, I appreciate just the openness that we are seeing from NRA leadership. And as you say, you know, sometimes these changes are hard. They're difficult. My heart goes out to everybody who is part of this reduction in force. I hope that they are able to land on their feet. But the NRA is, I mean, as somebody who in 2019 learned that his job at NRA TV went away by reading the New York Times, I can tell you, I mean, I'm still an NRA Benefactor Life member because this organization is bigger than any of us. The Second Amendment is bigger than any of us. So I hope that these moves are ultimately a net positive for the NRA. And I hope that there are brighter and bigger days ahead for the organization.
Well, I appreciate that, Cam. Yeah, it is a difficult. There's never a good time to do this. But history has shown if you wait, the situation deteriorates further. And so we're making these decisions today for the long-term benefit of law-abiding Second Amendment advocates, our members, and for the long-term health and well-being of the NRA. The NRA is going to survive and do very well in the future. We're reconstituting ourselves. We're rebuilding our forces. And this is a step in the right direction.
NRA Executive Vice President Doug Hamlin, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Cam.
My thanks once again to Doug for joining us on the program. And again, my heart really does go out to all of those impacted by this restructuring. That just sucks. No bones about it. All right, let's move on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Erie, Pennsylvania, where the leader of a February robbery and assault at an apartment in Meadville has now been sentenced to basically nothing more than probation. WJET in Erie reporting that a Crawford County teenager, 19-year-old Nicholas Roseberry, so an adult, even though a teenager, accused of being the leader behind a reported robbery and assault that stemmed from an argument that escalated along two others earlier this year, has now been handed down his sentence. Nicholas Roseberry faces up to 35 months of probation after he pleaded guilty to one count each of misdemeanor recklessly endangering another person and felony robbery. According to the Meadville Tribune, he is expected to be released this week due to time already served in jail after being arrested on February 19th. So that's it. That's all the jail time he'll receive. Again, placed on 35 months probation. He'll be on probation for a couple of years, but that's about it. Roseberry was accused of assaulting and taking a gun belonging to another Crawford County man with the help of two of his friends. The three individuals burst into the victim's apartment, guns drawn, on February 19th of this year. It's about 2:20 in the morning. According to police, Roseberry and the victim had a history, but they did not discuss what that history might have been. The Meadville Tribune reported that the incident started over Roseberry being woken up by the victim, who was trying to get a person in the apartment with him to care for a crying child. The two began to argue. Roseberry eventually tried to throw a punch. The argument escalated to the point that Roseberry, 19-year-old Joseph Weigel, 21-year-old Terry Fry III, made their way into the victim's apartment with a shotgun, two AR-style rifles, the child, crying child there in another room. The victim grabbed his own unloaded pistol, hoping to act in self-defense. Again, unloaded doesn't really do much help. At that point, you got a paperweight. And he was disarmed by Roseberry, who took his gun before leaving with the two others, who pointed their guns at the victim on the way out. Police arrived a couple minutes later, detained four people at the scene. They later learned that Roseberry had already fled the area, but he was taken into custody about 2 hours later. Weigel pleaded guilty on September 26th to misdemeanor simple assault and theft by unlawful taking. He got up to 24 months probation by a judge. Fry, I guess, still faces felony burglary, criminal trespassing, and robbery, along with misdemeanor simple assault charges, reckless endangerment, possession of instruments of crime. His case is still active, but I got to think that with his alleged compatriots resolving their criminal cases through plea bargains that resulted in nothing more than probationary sentences, including the alleged ringleader of this assault, that Mr. Fry, if he's not already been offered a deal that amounts to probation, I imagine his attorneys are going to be asking for one going forward. I mean, again, you've got a violent assault. You've got theft of a firearm. Pretty serious crimes as far as I'm concerned. Thankfully, nobody was hurt or injured in this attack. But, I mean, still, the sanctity of somebody's home was violated by three armed men. That individual's gun was taken, and the result is essentially a judicial slap on the wrist for at least two of the three defendants involved. I don't know about you. I take issue with that. Now, on to today's armed citizen story from Wyoming. Cowboy State Daily reporting a Pine Bluffs crop duster's shooting death ruled self-defense. It took several months for police to make this determination. The shooting happened on June 24th. So it's been a minute. And I'm not clear why the investigation took so long, because based on the Laramie County Sheriff's Office announcement and description of the facts, it seems like this was fairly straightforward here. Deputies responded to a disturbance just before 4:30 in the afternoon of June 24th. Earlier that day, a woman named Christine Heffley had moved some horses from the property that she and her husband, Kevin Heffley, shared. And she moved them to the property of a guy named Patrick Gross, which, according to the sheriff's office, upset Kevin. Cowboy State Daily says the two men had a recent history of conflict. And apparently that morning, Kevin Heffley threatened Gross over a text message saying, "I should have kicked your ass right in your own home." Later that day, Patrick Gross is sitting in his car, parked in his own driveway. Kevin Heffley shows up, driving rapidly towards him. The sheriff's office says just prior to being rammed by Heffley, Gross shot Heffley's radiator in an attempt to stop the vehicle. The sheriff's office says that crash reconstruction indicated that Kevin Heffley hit Gross's truck at 60 miles an hour, quote, constituting the threat of deadly force. I would say so. You've got somebody who says, I should have kicked your ass, then shows up at your home, barrels into you while you're sitting in the car at 60 miles an hour. That alone, it could have been fatal to Patrick Gross. But after Heffley rammed into Gross's vehicle, he then got out of his own vehicle, goes up to Gross, who's still in his own truck, probably trying to figure out what the heck just happened. And then Heffley starts punching him multiple times. While that's going on, Gross shot Heffley. The sheriff's office says that though Heffley was shot, he kept attacking Gross while clinging to the driver's door of Gross's truck while Gross tried to drive away to get away from the guy who was attacking him. He kept attacking, according to the sheriff's office, until he died of his injuries. Sheriff's office says investigators examined the scene, quote, meticulously, built advanced crash reconstruction analysis, analyzed evidence from phones and social media. Kevin Heffley's blood alcohol content was 0.143 at the time of his death, nearly twice the legal limit to drive, according to the statement. And the statement says the Laramie County DA's office has concluded that Gross acted in self-defense. I can't see how that would be otherwise. You're sitting in your car when a guy, I mean, forget the circumstances about the horses being moved and Heffley being ticked off about that. You're sitting in your car in your driveway. A guy runs into you at 60 miles an hour, gets out of his car, comes up to you, starts punching you in the face. Do you have a reasonable belief? Is it reasonable to believe that your life is in danger? Heck yeah, it is. So again, I don't know why it took from June 24th till October 29th to determine that this was a case of self-defense. But I again, based on what the sheriff's office describes, I cannot see how it would have been ruled otherwise. So there you go. Finally today, our good deed of the day. By the way, sorry for the rooster. He's been pretty quiet for months now, and for some reason today, just decides to start chiming in. Anyway, finally today, our good deed of the day. Just something, and I, you know, this is probably happening all over the country. So the government shutdown continues. We've all heard about what's happening on November the 1st. The SNAP benefits aren't going out. Regardless of how you feel about SNAP, people, you know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying that the program shouldn't be in effect anyway. It's my belief that even if there's abuses within the system, there are folks with a legitimate need who are going to be hurting if the shutdown continues, and it looks like it will. So this is just one example of what I suspect is happening all across the country. In Midlothian, Virginia, which is a suburb of Richmond, a place called Sergio's Pizza and Italian Restaurant posted this on their Facebook page. Sergio's has been blessed by the community for the past 34 years and is always looking for ways to give back. We know times are tough and the future is uncertain. You should not have to worry about where your next meal is coming from. From now until the end of November, we will be doing small trays of lasagna or baked ziti and salad, excuse me, for anyone who needs it. Just send us a direct message on here, Instagram or Facebook, with at least 24 hours notice, and we will make it happen. Thank you for always supporting us. Since that post, Sergio's Pizza has updated, saying that due to an overwhelming number of messages, it'll take a minute for the restaurant to get back to everybody. They say they'll be organizing pickups through Messenger. Pickups will be taking place Monday through Thursday before 4 p.m. And they actually had to turn off their messaging for a little while to get caught up on all of the people who were asking for this. I hope that people are not going to be abusing this and just looking for a free meal when they don't need one. But again, I suspect that we're going to see a lot of this, a lot of small businesses stepping up and helping out, offering a hand to those in need. I would say, you know, if you want to help, I'm sure local food banks can use either donations of non-perishable goods, cash donations as well. Hopefully, for, you know, for many reasons, hopefully the shutdown is over soon and the Democrats come to their senses here, realize it's not playing well for them. But in the meantime, the Schumer shutdown is in place and it is going to lead. I mean, it's already led to, you know, federal employees missing one paycheck, very well could lead to them missing two. And now with the loss of SNAP benefits not going out, you know, Virginia, where I live, Governor Glenn Youngkin's declared a state of emergency. They're using some budget surplus funds to sort of take the place of those SNAP benefits for those in need. There might be, you know, again, I'm sure there are going to be efforts in other states to do something similar. But, you know, some folks are going to be hurting. And if you can do what you can to help them out, well, I'll thank you for your very good deed. So that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Again, I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. And while the Schumer shutdown continues, there is, I mean, it doesn't make up for the pain that the Democrats are inflicting on the country, but there is a deal going on. You use the promo code POTUS47, POTUS47, you can get 74% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum memberships at Town Hall. No matter what tier support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits. If you're a Gold or Platinum member, you'll get to take part in our weekly live chats with the hot airs at Morrissey and myself. But there are all kinds of live chats that take place throughout the week. Your opportunity to hang out with some of your favorite Town Hall Media writers and columnists. Ad-free experience and so much more. Anyway, use the promo code POTUS47. Get 74% off your membership. We certainly thank you for your support. Have a great rest of your day today. And a good weekend as well. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.